the darkness of the world is dissipated. And the knowledge of learned persons or great souls is manifested. Indeed, no one can surpass your effulgence. For all things, manifested and unmanifested, gross and subtle, superior and inferior, are but various forms of you that are manifested by your effulgence. Purport by Srila Prabhupada. Without illumination, nothing can be seen, especially in this material world. The illumination in this world emanates from the effulgence of Sudarshan, the original vision of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. The illuminating principles of the sun, the moon, and fire emanate from Sudarshan. Similarly, illumination by knowledge also comes from Sudarshan, because with the illumination of Sudarshan, one can distinguish one thing from another, the superior from the inferior. Generally, people accept a powerful yogi like Durvasa Muni as wonderfully superior. But if such a person is chased by the Sudarshan Chakra, we can see his real identity and understand how inferior he is because of his dealings with devotees. Om Agyanati Mirandasya Ganandana Sarakaya Chakshurun Militam Gena Tasmai Shri Gurave Namaha. Tvatejasa dharma mayena samritam tama prakashas chadrisho mahatmanam duratyayas te mahima girim pate tvad rupame tad sarasat paravaram. O master of speech, by your effulgence, full of religious principles, the darkness of the world is dissipated, and the knowledge of learned persons or great souls is manifested. Indeed, no one can surpass your effulgence. For all things, manifested and unmanifested, gross and subtle, superior and inferior, are but various forms of you that are manifested by your effulgence. In these prayers, everybody's been listening to the story, pretty much everybody knows the story. Ambarish Maharaj took a little water to break his fast, and this angered Durvasa Muni, who created a demon to attack Ambarish because of his offense. The Sudarshan Chakra immediately came for the protection of Maharaj Ambarish and killed that demon, then turned towards Durvasa Muni. And Durvasa Muni ran to get away, to save himself. And he went to Lord Brahma, he went to Lord Shiva, he even went to Lord Vishnu in Vaikuntha. This is how powerful a yogi Durvasa Muni was, and prayed to all of them for protection from the Sudarshan Chakra, which was chasing him. And finally, when he arrived before Lord Vishnu, Lord Vishnu explained that you've offended my devotee. The only remedy is that you take shelter of him. You beg his forgiveness. So in this way, Durvasa Muni immediately paid his obeisances to Ambarish Maharaj. On the other side, Ambarish Maharaj was feeling extremely embarrassed that this person had come to his home, that he had been offended, that he was being chased by Sudarshan Chakra, and now he's paying his obeisances to the Sudarshan Chakra on behalf of Durvasa Muni. Since Durvasa Muni has asked him for protection, now he's offering his prayers. So he's describing in this particular verse how all illumination, all light, all those powers which make a thing discriminable, that you can see it, you can understand it, all those things actually emanate from Sudarshan. Everybody knows what darshan means. We take darshan all the time. Darshan means witness, to view, to see. But su when the affix su is added on to something, it means very auspicious. So very auspicious vision, su darshan, su bhadra. Bhadra is a blessing. Subhadra means an auspicious blessing. So sudarshan actually means an auspicious vision. Without that power, then there's no auspicious vision. He's the original source of that, and automatically, therefore, he's the weapon or associate of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. In the 15th chapter of Bhagavad Gita, Krishna describes that this material world is a perverted reflection of the spiritual world. Reality exists somewhere else. This world is not reality. This world is a reflection of reality. In reality, there's no need of the sun and the moon. Everything in reality is self-luminous. However, in the perverted reflection, when this material world is created, it's created completely dark. When Lord Brahma appeared atop the lotus flower, there was no sun or moon or planets. He was alone in this gigantic dark sphere. There's no illumination. So the infusion of intelligence, the infusion of knowledge, comes from true knowledge. Anything which is generated in the reflection of how to use things in the reflection isn't considered real knowledge, because it's still in the reflection. It's not true knowledge. True knowledge comes from outside the reflection and infuses one with intelligence about reality, which is beyond the reflection. And there's a nice description of it, of that supreme abode and this abode in that 15th chapter, text 6. That supreme abode of mine is not illumined by the sun or moon, nor by fire or electricity. Those who reach it never return to this material world. Purport. The spiritual world, the abode of the Supreme Personality of Godhead Krishna, which is known as Krishna Loka, Goloka Vrindavan, is described here. In the spiritual sky, there is no need of sunshine, moonshine, fire, or electricity, because all the planets are self-luminous. We have only one planet in this universe, the sun, which is self-luminous. But all the planets in the spiritual sky are self-luminous. The shining effulgence of those planets constitutes the shining sky known as the Brahmajyoti. Actually, the effulgence is emanating from the planet of Krishna, Goloka Vrindavan. Part of that shining effulgence is covered by the Mahatattva, the material world. Other than this, the major portion of that shining sky is full of spiritual planets, which are called Vaikunthas, chief of which is Goloka Vrindavan. So, everybody knows these pictures on the front of the Srimad Bhagavatam, where you have Goloka Vrindavan, Vaikuntha planets, and then one dark black circle with some Garbhodakshaya Vishnu and different planets inside it. That's the dark covered. It's covered. When you cover something, the light becomes a shadow. As long as the living entity is in the dark material world, he is in conditioned life. But as soon as he reaches the spiritual sky, by cutting through the false, perverted tree of this material world, he becomes liberated. Then there is no chance of his coming back here. In his conditioned life, the living entity considers himself to be the lord of this material world. But in his liberated state, he enters into the spiritual kingdom and becomes an associate of the Supreme Lord. There he enjoys eternal bliss, eternal life, full of knowledge. One should be captivated by this information. I love this sentence. One should be captivated. But we're captivated by something else. We're captivated by the reflections and shadows created by the illusion. Now you look at the headlines and immediately on a newspaper, or you walk into these grocery stores, especially in America, they line them up. And when you're standing there in line, all these pictures of people who are totally mundane and they're stupid, horrible stories, are bombarding you constantly. You know? And there's a, there, we're captivated. Oh, what happened to such and such a person? We should be captivated by stories of Krishna, by this philosophy, by association with devotees. He should desire to transfer himself to that eternal world and extricate himself from this false reflection of reality. For one who is too much attached to this material world, it is very difficult to cut that attachment. But if he takes to Krishna consciousness, there is a chance of gradually becoming detached. One has to associate himself with the devotees, those who are in Krishna consciousness. So the point that I'm going to link is that the persons who are propagating knowledge of reality are very dear to the Supreme Personality of Godhead, and they're always protected by Sudarshan, by the auspicious vision of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, because they're acting on his behalf, trying to enlighten the darkened, illusioned, conditioned living entities about the reality. One should search out the society dedicated to Krishna consciousness and learn how to discharge devotional service. In this way, he can cut off his attachment to the material world. One cannot be detached from attraction to the material world simply by dressing himself in saffron cloth. He must become attached to the devotional service of the Lord. Therefore, one should take it very seriously that devotional service, as described in the 12th chapter, is the only way to get out of this false representation of the real tree. In chapter 14, the contamination of all kinds of processes by material nature is described. Only devotional service is described as purely transcendental. The words Paramam Mama are very important in this verse. Actually, every nook and corner of this universe is the property of the Supreme Lord. But the spiritual world is Paramam, full of six opulences. The Katha Upanishad also confirms that in the spiritual world there is no need of sunshine, moonshine, or stars, for the whole spiritual sky is illuminated by this internal potency of the Supreme Lord. That supreme abode can be achieved only by surrender and no other means. So Maharaj Ambarish and Durvasa Muni are two perfect examples. One is completely surrendered to the reality, to the Supreme Personality of Godhead. And the other is very expert at mystic power in this material world, in the reflection. I was looking yesterday to try and find a theme, and I picked up a nice lecture by Srila Prabhupada, where he was describing the difference of the reaction of these two different people. When Durvasa Muni pulled the hair from his head and created the demon who was going to kill Maharaj Ambarish, what was Maharaj Ambarish's reaction? He surrendered. Hare Krishna. Surrendered to Krishna. When Sudarshan Chakra came after Durvasa Muni, what did he do? He ran. He tried to save himself. So note the, remember the last couple of classes I've talked about the Bhava Rupa, the motivation, the inner reactions, the inner motives, the inner intentions that we have are totally diametrically opposed here. One is surrendered. Oh, yes, Krishna. What is that one? Tat tenu kampam shukshamikshamano. Whatever comes, I'll take it. And the other one is, he's trying to manipulate. He's trying to adjust. He's trying to save himself, to go to Brahma, to go to Shiva, to go even to Krishna, to Lord Vaikuntha. Please save me. I don't want to die. So in all these cases, it's a nice example. Durvasa Muni is an extremely unique individual, as we know. And I thought that since we've heard so many different weeks of his of information about him, it would be nice to hear a little more about who he is and some of his pastimes. In the third and fourth canto, you may remember that Vidura is listening to Maitreya explain a little more about how this world, how this universe was populated and those different genealogical tables. And the birth of Durvasa is explained therein. Anasuya The wife of Atri Muni gave birth to three very famous sons, Soma, Dattatreya, and Durvasa, who were partial representations of Lord Vishnu, Lord Shiva, and Lord Brahma. Soma was a partial representation of Lord Brahma. He's the moon god, Soma. Dattatreya was a partial representation of Lord Vishnu. And Durvasa was a partial representation of Lord Shiva. Hearing this, Vidura inquired from Maitreya, "My dear master, how is it that the three deities, Brahma, Vishnu, and Shiva, who are the creator, maintainer, and destroyer of the whole creation, became the offspring and the wife of Atri Muni?" Maitreya answered, "When Lord Brahma ordered Atri Muni to create generations after marrying Anasuya, Atri Muni and his wife went to perform severe austerities in the valley of the mountain known as Riksha. In that mountain valley flows a river named Nirvindya. On the banks of the river are many ashok trees and other plants full of palasa flowers, and there are always the sweet sounds of water flowing from a waterfall. The husband and wife reached that beautiful place. There the great sage concentrated his mind by the yogic breathing exercises, and thereby controlling all attachment, he remained standing on one leg only, eating nothing but air, and stood there on one leg for 100 years. He was thinking, 'May the Lord of the universe, whom I have taken shelter of, kindly be pleased to offer me a son exactly like him.' While Atri Muni was engaged in these severe austerities, a blazing fire began to come out of his head by virtue of his breathing exercise. And that fire was seen by the three principal deities of the three worlds. At that time, the three deities approached the hermitage of Atri Muni, accompanied by the denizens of the heavenly planets, such as the celestial beauties Gandharvas, Siddhas, the Vidyadharas, and Nagas. Thus, they entered the ashram of the great sage who had become famous by his austerities. The sage was standing on one leg. But as soon as he saw the three deities had appeared before him, he was so pleased to see them all together that despite great difficulty, he approached them on one leg." This was amazing to me. He was performing austerity, standing on one leg to get darshan. And when they finally appeared before him, he still hopped to go, instead of putting the other foot down and paying obeisances, he hopped in front of them. Thereafter, he began to offer prayers to the three deities who were seated on different carriers. A bull, who rides on a bull. A swan and Garuda, who held in their hands a drum, kusagrass, and a discus, Sudarshan. The sage offered them respects by falling down like a stick. Atri Muni was greatly pleased to see that the three devas were gracious towards him. His eyes were dazzled by the effulgence of their bodies, and therefore he closed his eyes for the time being. But since his heart was already attracted by the deities, somehow or other he gathered his senses with folded hands and sweet words began to offer prayers to the predominating deities of the universe. The great sage Atri said, "O Lord Brahma, Vishnu, and Lord Shiva, you have divided yourself into three bodies, accepting the three modes of material nature, as you do in every millennium for the creation, maintenance, and dissolution of the cosmic manifestation. I offer my respectful obeisances unto all of you, and beg to inquire, whom of you three have I called by my prayer? I called for the Supreme Personality of Godhead, desiring a son like him, and I thought of him only. But although he is far beyond the mental speculation of man, all three of you have come here. Kindly let me know how you have come, for I am greatly, greatly bewildered by this." Upon hearing Atri Muni speak in this way, the three deities smiled and replied in the following sweet words, "Dear Brahman, your desire, you are perfect in your determination, and therefore you have as you have decided, so it will happen. It will not happen otherwise. We are all the same person upon whom you were meditating, and therefore we have all come to you. You will have sons who will represent a partial manifestation of our potency, and because we desire all good fortune for you, those sons will glorify your reputation throughout the world." Thus, while the couple looked on, The three deities, Brahma, Vishnu, and Maheshwara, disappeared from that place after bestowing upon Atri Muni the benediction. Thereafter, from the partial representation of Brahma, the moon god was born of them. From the partial representation of Vishnu, the great mystic Dattatreya was born. And from the partial representation of Shankar, Lord Shiva, Durvasa was born. Now you may hear from me of the many sons of Angira. So Durvasa Muni, in this way, is a partial representation of Lord Shiva. In the Brahmanda Purana, it's further described how this happened. Once, Lord Brahma and Lord Shiva had an argument. And Lord Shiva, who is Rudra, in charge of the mode of ignorance, became so incensed, he became so angry that no one could be near him. He was so angry with Lord Brahma after their fight, after their disagreement. So even Parvati, Lord Shiva's dear consort, went to him, as many husbands, as many wives often do, and said, "Prabhu, you're impossible to live with," because he was so angry. So Lord Shiva, in order to appease Parvati, decided to take that anger and deposit it in the wife of Atri Muni, Anasuya. So when he gave that partial, when he empowered her, Atri Muni, with that partial representation of himself, his anger is there. And the word Durvasa literally means one who's difficult to live with. So this is Durvasa Muni. But because he's a partial incarnation of Lord Shiva, it has to be some auspiciousness there. There has to be some inner bhav, some higher purpose, rather than just anger personified manifesting. So there's a devotional element because Lord Shiva is a devotee. So we see in the different pastimes of Durvasa Muni that his presence somehow enhances and assists in Lord Krishna's lila. For example, the pastime with Kunti. We all know that Durvasa Muni would travel various places, and he came to the palace of King of Kunti Bhoja, and he had a adopted daughter at the time, young Kunti, and Durvasa Muni was taking care of, feeding him, taking care of him, whatever necessities he needs, cleaning after him. And he became very pleased by Kunti, and therefore gave her that mantra by which she could call any demigod. And of course, Karna was born, who's a key personality in the Mahabharata. Similarly, one time he went to Hastinapur when Duryodhana and Dhritarashtra were king and the Pandavas were exiled and living in Kamyavan, which is also in Braj. That's where Yudhisthira had that conversation with the Yaksha. So in Hastinapur, Durvasa Muni was traveling and he went to the big palace, and Duryodhana knew that this mystic power of this personality is a great, and he's easily angered. So he fed him all very nicely and took care of him very nicely. And just like Lord Shiva is known as Ashutosh, he's easily pleased and very easily angered. Similarly, Duryodhana knew, if I please him, he'll give me a benediction. So he served him very nicely. And at the end of the meal, Durvasa said, "Thank you, Baba. What can I do? Take a benediction." He said, "Actually, I have nothing that I," but he's a politician, "I have nothing that I really want. Just want you to go visit my cousin brothers in Kamyavan, but make sure you go in the afternoon after they've eaten. Just do this for me." So when Durvasa was coming, of course, everybody knows the story that Draupadi had this one pot that was given to her by the sun god. Because Yudhisthira was a king, a kshatriya, his duty, his dharma, was that he would always want to feed the Brahmins. And when he was in exile, without the wealth and facilities of being the king, he was in great anxiety, how I will do my duty. So the sun god came and gave Draupadi a pot, which is now in Udupi, at the Madhvacharya Math there. you go take prasad, you can take prasad from Draupadi's pot. It feeds unlimited numbers of pilgrims. Any number of people can come there, and somehow or another they have enough prasadam. It's a mystic cooking pot. But after Draupadi had eaten, the mystic pot wouldn't produce any more food that day. So Durvasa Muni came in the afternoon, and everybody was in anxiety because Draupadi had already eaten. How are we going to feed Durvasa Muni and his 60,000 disciples? So they told him, you go take bath in the river, and when you come back, we'll give us time to cook some prasad. They were in great anxiety. They prayed to Lord Krishna, their protector. And Krishna, somehow by his mystic power, came on the scene and was seeing the anxiety of the Pandavas and Yudhisthira and Draupadi, and said, where is that pot? Is there anything left? There must be something. She said, no, I already cleaned it. I already washed it. But he found one little grain. And when Krishna ate that grain, then back on the river where Durvasa Muni and his disciples were bathing, all of a sudden they started, oh, I'm full. I don't even feel like eating. We better not go to Yudhisthira, otherwise it will be impolite to go and not be able to eat. Let's just leave. So they went away, and in this way they were saved. Similarly, another time, Durvasa Muni was traveling throughout Braj, and he came to Varsana, the palace of King Vrishabhanu and Kirtida. And they had their young daughter, Srimati Radharani. And same thing as Kunti, she served him very nicely, cooked for him, washed up after him, took very nice. And Durvasa Muni is very pleased. Oh, you're such a nice young gopi girl. I give you the benediction that whatever you cook will be sweeter than nectar. And whoever eats your cooking will live long life and be very healthy. So word spread throughout Braj that Srimati Radharani had received this wonderful benediction from Durvasa Muni. And in Nandagram, when Mother Yasoda heard this, she thought, oh, I should get this little girl to cook for my Nandalal. I should get her to cook. So she contacted Kirtida and Vrishabhanu and said, we should have Srimati Radharani come every day and cook for my Krishna. So every day, Srimati Radharani and the gopis go and they cook for Krishna. And in this way, Krishna eats the prasadam, which is sweeter than nectar, which is gives health and long life to everyone. So this benedictions and curses by Durvasa Muni are extremely pleasurable. And there's one kind of hidden story. If in Mathura, if you go to Vishramghat is the place where, after he had killed Hiranyaksha, Lord Varahadev took rest. Vishram means to take rest. So he went there on the banks of the Jamuna, and he spoke the Adi Varaha Purana to Mother Bhumi, who had prayed for his advent. If you remember, Bhumi had fallen out. Actually, she didn't pray. She fell into the gunk, and then he came and picked her out. So after he had saved Mother Earth, personified, he spoke the Adi Varaha Purana. And after killing Kamsa, Krishna wanted to show Devaki and Vasudev that he was dead, because he had tormented them. He had killed their children, six children, and tormented them, kept them in jail for so long. So after he killed Kamsa, Krishna took Kamsa's body and he dragged it to the Jamuna and he threw it down. And then he sat down and he rested at Vishramghat. And Devaki and Vasudev saw the dead body of Kamsa, so they were peaceful. Just across the river, you go there and look right across the river, that's where Durvasa Muni's ashram is. So this story relates to the gopis crossing the river to see Durvasa Muni. From the Garga Samhita, Garga Muni is Lord Krishna's family priest, the one who gave the name-giving ceremony. It's a story, a conversation between Bahulaspa, a king, and Narada Muni. O sage, Bahulaspa said, how did Sri Krishna Chandra fulfill the desires of the personified Vedas that they were blessed to take birth as gopis? The personified Vedas, you may remember, last time I gave class, we talked about different kinds of people that were in their homes when Krishna was playing his flute and they couldn't get out. Whereas the Nityasiddha gopis got out, some of the sadhana siddhis got out, but the sadhana siddhis who weren't perfected were restricted by their family members. So some of those gopis were the personified Vedas in there. They know the Vedas so clearly, personified Vedas, that they understand the essence. The very sweetest essence in all the Vedas is what? Gopi Bhava. The love that the gopis have for Sri Krishna. So understanding understanding the Vedas so clearly, they worship Krishna with the mood, please let us become gopis. So King Bahulasa was asking, how is it that Krishna fulfilled this desire? O wise one, you are the best of they who know everything. Please tell this sacred and wonderful pastime of the Lord of Gopal, Lord Gopal Krishna. Narada said, O King of Videha, because of a benediction given by Lord Seshai Vishnu, some personified Vedas took birth as gopis and the saintly Gopa families of Braj. In Vrindavan forest, seeing the handsome Krishna and yearning to attain him, they approached Vrindadevi, the ruler of Vrindavan. Pleased with Vrinda's benediction, Lord Krishna, who was always kind to his devotees, every day entered the gopis' homes to enjoy the rasa dance. O King, once, when 6 hours of the night had already passed, Lord Krishna came to their homes very late. The anxious gopis worshipped him with sweet words and asked this question. O Savior from troubles, why did you not come sooner? As Chakora birds yearn to see the moon, we gopis always yearn to see you. The Supreme Lord answered, My beloveds, a person who lives in someone's heart is never far away. Gazing at the sun in the sky, a lotus on the earth is inspired to blossom wide. My beloveds, today my spiritual master, Durvasa Muni, came to Bandirvan forest and I went there to serve him. The spiritual master is like Lord Brahma. The spiritual master is like Lord Vishnu. The spiritual master is like Lord Shiva. The spiritual master is like the Supreme Personality of Godhead. I offer my respectful obeisances to my glorious spiritual master. O my beloveds, I worshipped Durvasa and offered respects to his lotus feet. That's why I was late coming to your home. Narada said, filled with wonder to hear these words, with bowed heads and folded hands, the gopis asked Lord Krishna, You are the perfect Supreme Personality of Godhead. Durvasa Muni is your spiritual master? Oh Lord, our hearts yearn to see him. Oh Lord, how can we go see him now that 6 hours of the night have passed? The great Jamuna River is a great obstacle. Oh Lord, how can we cross the river without a boat? The Lord answered, You must go see him. When you come to the Jamuna, speak these words. O Jamuna, best of rivers, if Krishna is a perfect and faultless brahmachari, then please give us a path to cross you. When you speak these words, the Jamuna will give you a path. O girls of Braj, then you may easily cross. Hearing these words, the girls of Braj filled 56 great pots with many different kinds of food. They went to the Jamuna and with bowed heads repeated Krishna's words. The Jamuna at once gave path to the gopis. Filled with wonders, the gopis went to Bandirvan forest where they saw Durvasa Muni, bowed down before him, circumambulated him, each of them saying, O sage, the food I have brought should be tasted first. And placed many items before him. Understanding the pure devotion of the quarreling gopis, Durvasa, the tiger among sages, spoke sweetly to them. O gopis, I am a Paramahamsa. I have attained the highest goal in life. I never perform any material actions. For this reason, each of you should with her own hand place in my mouth the food she has brought. The jubilant gopis then placed in his wide open mouth all 56 kinds of food that they had each brought. As the gopis fed him and watched what he did, Durvasi, the king of mystic yogis, ate thousands of baras of food as if he were tormented with hunger. When all the pots were emptied, the gopis looked at each other with astonishment. The astonished gopis, their desires now fulfilled, bowed down before the peaceful sage who was always kind to the devotees and spoke. O sage, When we came here to see you, we were able to cross the river by repeating some words Krishna told us. How will we return? Now we are filled with doubt. We offer our respects to you. Please give us a way to cross the Jamuna. The sage said, I will give you something to say that will make it very easy for you to pass across the Jamuna. When you get to the Jamuna River, say the following words. O Jamuna, O best of rivers, if Durvasa Muni carefully follows his vow of living only by drinking Durva grass juice and never eats or drink anything else, please give us path to cross you. When you speak these words, the Jamuna will give you the path. O king, hearing these words, the gopis bowed down before the great sage, went to the Jamuna, repeated the sage's words, and easily crossed the river. Astonished, the saintly gopis approached Lord Krishna. Then a doubt arose in their hearts. During the rasa dance in a secluded place, when their desires were all fulfilled, the gopis asked this question of Lord Krishna. We saw Durvasa Muni, but now a doubt about what he told us has arisen in our hearts. As the spiritual master acts, so the disciple follows. If the spiritual master speaks lies, then the disciple will also speak lies. O Lord, you are a rake. You are the gopis' lover. Since childhood, you have enjoyed nectar pastimes with the gopis. How is it you are a brahmachari? O Savior from troubles, please tell us, how is Durvasa a sage that lives only by drinking Durvasa grass juice? We personally saw him eat an enormous feast. O Master of Braj, this is our doubt. The Supreme Lord said, I am the Supreme Personality of Godhead. I am all-pervading, faultless, and equal to all. I am freed from the material defects of possessiveness and false ego. I am free from the modes of nature. As my devotees serve me, I also serve them in reciprocation. As I reciprocate in this way, so a wise and faultless devotee also reciprocates. Let not the wise disrupt the minds of the ignorant who are attached to fruit of action. They should not be encouraged to refrain from work, but to engage in work in the spirit of devotion. So Krishna explained to them that his point was, I'm completely transcendental, and I reciprocate with each person the way they reciprocate with me. In other words, Krishna isn't never lusty. He's a complete brahmachari, but because the gopis' love is so overwhelmingly powerful and pure, he reciprocates with them and fulfills their desires. It's not that he needs this desire. In this way, he's a completely pure brahmachari because he's never sexually agitated. He's fulfilling their desire. One is understood to be in full knowledge whose every act is devoid of a desire for sense gratification. He is said by sages to be a worker whose fruit of action is burned up by the fire of perfect knowledge. Such a man of understanding acts with his mind and intelligence perfectly controlled, gives up all sense of proprietorship over his possessions, and acts only for the bare necessities of life. Thus working, he is not affected by sinful reactions. In this world, there is nothing so sublime and pure as transcendental knowledge. Such knowledge is the mature fruit of all mysticism, and one who has achieved this enjoys the self within himself in due course of time. Durvasa Muni ate that great feast for your sake. He did not desire to eat it. He lives only by drinking a little Durva grass juice. Narada Muni continued, O king of Mithila, when they heard these words, the gopis that had been the personified Vedas became filled with transcendental knowledge, and their doubts were dispelled. So in this way also, Durvasa Muni is a unique personality. One of the other essential points in this pastime is that no matter how great one may be, no matter how powerful, he's more powerful than we can ever hope to be. But when he offended a devotee, he was subject to immediate death. His power couldn't save him. So, similarly, in our relating to this, it shows how protective we should be of even thinking badly about another devotee. No one's perfect here. We're all in the material world filled with anarthas and problems and anxieties. And other people may have different anxieties and troubles. And if we help each other and become soft-hearted and liberal and simply want to be instruments of Sudarshan, giving an auspicious vision of reality to others, then our life will become pure and will please the Lord, and in this way remain freed from offenses. Any questions or comments? Trivikram Prabhu?
I have a straw in my mouth, right? So do you think that this pastime was the arrangement of the Lord? Or because earlier when you read about the gopis, you said that Durvasa, through his mystic power, could see something, their devotion or something like that. So couldn't have Durvasa seen the devotion in Ambarish, Maharaj Ambarish, and actually understood that he didn't actually break the fast? I mean, you know, because he's very powerful, you know. And I mean, that was a petty incident, really. Very petty, because, you know.
Although it's not mentioned, it appears that, as I mentioned, Durvasa Muni, being an incarnation of Lord Shiva, an expansion, manifestation of Lord Shiva, there has to be some underlying nectar that's there. What's the judge a thing by its result? What is the result of the pastime with Maharaj Ambarish and Durvasa? The glory of the devotees. Don't offend devotees, no matter how great you are. So by his acting in this way, that result was manifested. Jai, Srila Prabhupada ki jai.